This content is for institutional investors and information purposes only. It does not contain investment, financial, legal, tax, or any other advice and should not be relied upon for this purpose. The materials are not tailored to your particular personal and/or financial position. If you require advice based on your specific circumstances, you should contact a professional advisor. Opinions expressed are those of the speakers as of the date of publication, are subject to change without notice, and do not necessarily reflect Mercer's opinions.
Hello, and welcome to Critical Thinking, Critical Issues. I am Marieke de Roo, and today we're coming to you live from Mercer's Global Investment Forum in Dublin. 2023 was a year of two halves. It opened to widespread warnings of recession, yet ended with the S&P 500 up over nearly 30%. While we expect the global economy to continue to normalize through the course of 2024, and that soft landing ultimately to materialize, the outlook remains pretty divergent. The geopolitical environment remains complex, and markets are looking ahead to potential volatility through a bumper year of elections. The market experience of the recent past has reinforced the need for insurance to build robust portfolios that not only support their primary business, but equips firms to respond to and particularly capitalize on evolving market risks and opportunities. I'm delighted to be joined by two guests today to unpack what it means to build agile portfolios in support of insurance propositions today. With me are Francesco Martorana, Chief Investment Officer at Italian's insurance major Generali. He joins me to share his views from behind the wheel at one of Europe's largest insurance portfolios, alongside my esteemed colleague, David Morrow, insurance proposition leader for EMEA at Mercer. To start us off, Francesco, let me start with you. And just to set the scene, as we mentioned, you're the investment leader of one of Europe's largest insurers. What's really been front of mind through the first quarter of this year?
Thanks, Marieke, for having me here. So front of mind have been for sure geopolitical risk because that is a driver for financial markets. And we know this year we have a heavy political calendar and that can have a profound implication for financial markets, for diversification and asset class preferences. The second topic is how to ensure our, especially life products, are competitive in this environment because we have strong competition from bank deposits and government bonds. And so we want to make sure our products are competitive and we can benefit from clearly a favorable yield environment.
Understood. Thank you, Francesco. So David, turning to you then, what have Mercer's insurance clients been focused on thus far?
Well, I'd like to share a few findings from Mercer's 2024 insurance survey. First, market volatility was a key concern of our insurance survey respondents. So approximately 61% highlighted market volatility as their primary investment concern. What we've seen so far this year is the MOVE index, so the bond market volatility index, has ticked down, but is still high in historical standards. Number two, three quarters of respondents indicated that they already do invest in private markets or they intend to invest in private markets. Number three, two-thirds of respondents indicated that their key operational challenge for this year would be regulatory change. And number four, sustainability integration is increasing, but there are significant regional divergences in approach to how insurance companies are adopting ESG integration, investing in impact strategies, climate transition, and so on.
Understood. Thanks, David. So it's clear to see that we find ourselves in an interesting market for fixed income investors. Spreads are tight, yet rates and bond volatility remain elevated and defaults are ticking up. How should insurance investors be thinking about those fixed income markets? Francesco, maybe I turn first to you. Can you share how Generali are positioning on rates, spreads, and general positioning within fixed income?
Sure. Well, starting with rates and duration, clearly we are an LDI investor. So we start from the liabilities and we don't like to carry significant ALM mismatch. So we have a well-matched book in terms of duration and cash flows. And actually, we took the opportunity of this rates environment to reduce further some duration mismatch where they were present. Of course, we have to factor in also the volatility on the liability assumptions. Last year, we have observed, like the whole industry, an uptick in terms of lapses and surrenders. So we have also to keep some buffers in terms of cash and shorter duration bonds to make sure we can handle this volatility on the liability side for life business. Another important factor is inflation. That is relevant, at least for our business, mainly for property and casualty, so general insurance, because we don't have indexed liabilities in our life business, or to a very small extent. And that is important also for our asset strategy. So we have been increasing the allocation to inflation-linked bonds, but also to infrastructure debt, which provides inflation protection. And we already have in the portfolio real estate, where clearly both the rents but also the values are directly and indirectly linked to inflation. When it comes to credit, we are a bit more prudent. We think, especially on the high yield side, spreads are pretty tight compared to where we are in the cycle. So in terms of risk reward, we favor more investment grade corporate bonds. And if we want to pick up more yield, we rather prefer subordinated bonds of investment grade issuers, or even better, direct lending. Direct lending provides an attractive spread versus public market like high yield and leverage loans, and that is a cushion to an increase in defaults. We expect some increase in defaults, but not to the levels seen during the previous recessions.
Understood. Thank you for that. So David, let me turn to you then. And what are Mercer's thoughts on insurance and in particular the fixed income investment?
Maybe a little bit of a backdrop, particularly when it comes to the U.S. The European market has been a little bit less profligate in terms of borrowing. But in the U.S., between 1789, when George Washington was president, and 2009, when George W. Bush was president, so the 43rd president of the United States, the federal debt increased to $7 trillion. Since then, there have been three presidents, and they've added $27 trillion to the debt. So now we're at $34 trillion. And it helps to explain some of the nervousness around how the U.S. and other governments are going to handle this indebtedness. Mercer generally shares Francesco's reservations about high yield. We do like frontier market debt. We like Asian high yield. But we also appreciate that many insurance companies can't invest in those asset classes or are less familiar with those asset classes. Our general views on fixed income is that investment grade core fixed income remains very advantageous for insurance companies in terms of return potential and in terms of income. We believe that there is a better risk reward trade-off between for fixed income over equities in this environment. For example, at the start of the year, a U.S. investment grade portfolio would have had the same return expectations as a 60-40 equity bond portfolio with one third of the risk. The downside or the risk to over allocating to fixed income in this environment is inflation, of course. So everybody is watching inflation readings across the globe very closely. But for the time being, we believe that there's a very good opportunity for insurance companies and investment grade fixed income and credit in particular.
Clear, clear. Thank you. Thank you both. So there are a number of investment trends that are evident in the market. And David, you just referenced some already that came out of that survey. In particular, ESG impact investing, as well as the unfettered growth of private markets as an asset class. Francesco, let me start with you. And can you elaborate on how you within your firm are participating, or perhaps not, in such trends? Are you considering these, or are there any other structural mega trends that you see within your, that you apply within your investment strategy?
We definitely do. We are, among other things, signatories of the Net Zero Asset Owner Alliance. So we have a commitment to decarbonize our investment portfolio fully by 2050. But actually, we have intermediate challenging targets. We are ahead of them for the time being, but soon we will have to take new commitments for 2030. And the way we look at especially climate in terms of integration into our investment policy is with the lenses of the double materiality. So we want to understand the impact we can have on the environment, but also the impact the environment has on our portfolio in terms of physical risk and transition risk. When it comes to how we make a positive impact on the environment, on top of the exit from carbon intensive industries, we actually deployed essentially three investment strategies to help financing the energy transition. The first one is through an investment program in green, social, and sustainable bonds. By today, we have invested in excess of $15 billion into those instruments with proprietary screening. So we want to make sure the companies we lend to into a green bond format, to make an example, have strong and robust criteria on how to allocate the proceeds from the bonds, and we monitor actually the impact of this financing in terms of which type of projects those corporates have funded. So this is the first piece of the strategy. The second one has been an ambitious investment program into infrastructure debt and equity with focus on funding projects like photovoltaic, but also batteries and wind, where we have actually a direct impact in terms of financing the expansion of those technologies. Third one has to do with our real estate portfolio. We are a large real estate investor. We have more than $30 billion of real estate equity, unlisted assets, so properties that we manage internally. And so on this portfolio, again, as a part of the Net Zero Asset Owner Alliance, we committed to align a significant portion of this portfolio to the 1.5 degrees trajectory. And to do so, we not only do like turnover, so selling lower quality buildings and buy higher quality buildings, but even more, we have a CapEx program. So every year we invest a significant amount of money to upgrade our properties in order to reach the highest energy qualification criteria and energy certifications.
Clear, clear. Very interesting what you're doing at Generali. Let me then turn to you, David. So from Mercer's point of view, what are some of those structural changes that you see? You agree with some of what Francesco's saying?
100%. The, you know, this ESG impact climate discussion, you know, insurance companies are like snowflakes. You know, every one of them is different. And the discussions around this topic in particular all vary significantly, even within regions. There are regional divergences, but even within regions like the US or in Europe, every single conversation with the client is different. But absolutely, these topics are of high relevance. Another structural trend that we see is, as you alluded to in your question, the rise of private credit. We've seen an exponential rise in interest in private credit for several reasons. Number one, banks have retrenched. That's a familiar story. But also, insurance companies have become a lot more familiar with the asset class. The insurance marketplace is driving demand for the asset class. Insurance companies often also have too much liquidity, so they have headroom and their risk budgets to add more illiquidity risk. Insurance-friendly strategies have also continued to evolve in the private credit space. So you have some sort of a combination of higher quality private credit strategies, which are appealing to insurance companies, you know, or strategies that have more simplicity, which tends to lead to more favorable capital charge treatments, but that still also add a significant spread over comparable listed instruments. And lastly, the operational infrastructure around private markets and private credit in particular has improved. Managers are more familiar with the reporting requirements that insurance companies have. And so it's the whole process is just a lot less painful than it used to be. So, you know, we believe at Mercer that the line between public and private fixed income will continue to blur, that allocations will continue to increase, that large insurance companies will typically go direct, that smaller insurance companies will often look to fund-to-fund structures. And you know, the future is very bright and rosy for the asset class.
Okay, with that, I think we'll conclude. Thank you so much, Francesco and David, for your insightful perspective. Thank you all for listening. If you like this content and want to hear more, please do subscribe to our podcast or visit our website at www.mercer.com. Thank you.